This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Liv and Len on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Today, we are kicking off the first episode of what I hope will be a long and fruitful series, Feminist Fridays. So the idea of the series is to focus on social issues surrounding women. And in this first episode, I would like to explore the concept of feminism and what it stands for. So to get things started, joining me today is Dr. Sharon Bong, an Associate Professor of Gender Studies at Monash University, to give us all a crash course on feminism and to explore why feminism has also become a dirty word to some. The whole idea of doing this series, Feminist Friday, I think it started because I think, for me, I think feminism is a misunderstood movement. And just recently, I spoke to a very close friend who asked me if the opposite of a misogynist is a feminist. And I was aghast. I didn't know how to respond to that before I started yelling, no, of course not. But anyway, I thought I'd get the professionals in to kind of, you know, just give me a 101 on feminism and give everybody a 101 on feminism. And, you know, why has it become such a dirty word to so many people? You know, just address these sorts of things. Okay, so here's the first loaded question. What is feminism?
Oh, wow. How does one summarize a response to that? I think one looks to the values that feminism as a movement or that feminists as individuals would stand for. And the first value that comes to mind would be social justice, but quite specifically, it's justice for women, which is how the movement started, and by extension, gender justice. So one looks to the values and values like, you know, a respect and embracing of diversity and also a spirit of inclusiveness, not wanting to exclude, you know, ostracize or demonize. Yes.
Anyone for that matter. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
So who are feminists and, you know, what do they want?
So what do we want?
What do we want? Yes. What do you and I want?
Who are feminists? It's individuals, and as I mentioned in the in response to the first loaded question, as you put it, it could be anyone, you know, anyone who embraces values of diversity, inclusion, and justice for, well, on the grounds of gender identity, by extension, sexual orientation. But as I mentioned, the movement started with you know, wanting to promote gender justice for women. So women's rights was quite paramount, and it still is.
Can I just ask how you got interested in feminism? When did you suddenly realize, yes, I'm a feminist?
I think the realization came much earlier before, you know, identifying with the label, which came much later and in a very academic setting. So I remember, and this is the anecdote to a book that I wrote. It's a memory from childhood, and it's related to my maternal grandmother and how she used to always, you know, she was very sweet, and she would remember all her grandchildren's birthdays. But that was a special gift for grandsons. So I, one day I asked her in my faltering Cantonese still sucks still today, but I asked her, you know, why do the grandsons only get the, you know, chicken drumstick? No, I think it was a duck drumstick. And then she just smiled. But the following year, both my sister and I also had similar gift. So I think, you know, for most of us, it's, I like to think, but I know that it's instinctive, you know. It starts with a gut feeling and a sort of anger, I suppose, when you are confronted with any form of social injustice. And it's particularly poignant, I guess, when you experience it firsthand. Mm-hmm. But you could also equally feel quite strongly and empathize with, you know, other people who are on the receiving end. So that would be the impetus to, you know, how one gets started. Yeah.
When you did start to say, I am a feminist, did you face any sort of, I don't know, backlash, if that's the word, from members of your family or from close friends?
I think just on personal experience alone, I think it was, I wouldn't call it backlash, but certainly there were reactions.
Reactions, okay.
Yeah, yeah, there were reactions. But my immediate family has been incredibly supportive. So when I first articulated feminism and fully identified with it, it was in relation to being a Catholic and how the Catholic Church you know, still until today, does not ordain women as priests. Highly taboo topic in the context of Catholicism. And we're all born Catholics, my siblings and I. So there have been many delicate, you know, issues since then, because the third generation would very openly discuss issues like homosexuality, issues like premarital sex, you know, very openly. And open forums are actually quite encouraged over family dinners.
Yeah.
So if there had been any backlash, and I think I've been quite privileged not to have had, you know, people just come up at me and throw God knows what. But in the class, when I, you know, fully identify as feminist, I certainly impress it on my students that I'm not there to, you know, have this whole conversion of hearts going on. And the thing that I ask from my students is simply this, that they keep an open mind, you know, throughout the 12 weeks of the semester, and fully engage with the material and the discussions. And at the end of that, you know, critically engage. And at the end of that, they need to make up their own minds.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully there would be a you know, change of minds and hearts where there needs to be, yeah.
So just going back to the whole concept of feminism,
yes.
We were speaking about who can feminists be. And I think a common misconception is that men can't be feminists.
Mm.
How would you argue that?
I think if there are men who are listening to this program, when it's eventually aired, would be the first to like jump up and start reacting. Of course, of course, it's not biologically determined. It's not just for women and
mm-hmm.
girls.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for me, you know, when I know of girls and women who shy away from the label, I guess it does get to me, because even after having said that, you know, that's not biologically determined, one does look in the first instance, not the last, not exclusive, right, to girls and to women to, I suppose, be empowered enough to stand up for themselves and for other, you know, girls and women.
And you touched on something that I wanted to talk about. A lot of women who don't like the term feminist, who don't identify as feminists, even though they, you know, they advocate for feminist values.
Yes.
Why are they so reluctant to call themselves feminists? Why has it become the other F word?
Yeah, I don't know, Jillian. You'd have to ask them, and we'd have to do, you know, like a proper study. This is the academic, me speaking. I think, I'm guessing it has to do with maybe, you know, certain misconceptions that are floating around, and you, you know, described it, used the adjective dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were chatting just a while ago, it has to do with, you know, certain preconceptions that feminists are bra burners, you know, man haters. And there are many schools of feminist thought. So when we talk about feminism, we use it in a plural sense. So we talk about feminisms, because mm-hmm. there are many schools of feminist thought, and translated into, you know, very practical action, into activism. And so indeed, you know, when it comes to lesbian feminism, such ideological underpinnings, mm-hmm. you know, seeing men as the enemy,
mm-hmm.
To some extent, that was certainly there. But as we know, feminism is pretty complex. Pretty complex, a sort of term, a kind of ideology, and in terms of its history, in many different social cultural contexts as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not as if it's something alien. Yeah, imported from the West, you know, enculturated, you know, on Asian soil, African soil. So it's had to, in the context of finding its footing
mm-hmm.
on home ground,
mm-hmm.
has needed to make sense of, you know, cultural underpinnings. Yes.
Yep. So you were mentioning, you know, that, like you said, feminisms. There's so many different feminist work and within differing feminist constructs, right? So all of them have different priorities regarding activism, like you said, practical action. What are some notable areas of conflict with respect to feminist priorities and attitudes?
Conflicts, certainly on the ground, when we talk about bringing the conventions home. So for instance, CEDAW, the convention on the elimination of all forms of discrimination against women since 1979, in terms of bringing the conventions home, why do so many, you know, states' parties have reservations It has to do with, not exclusively, but a lot of the reservations have to do with cultural sensitivities, mm-hmm. you know, and the unreadiness of government themselves, and let alone the citizens mm-hmm. At large to be prepared to, you know, take on board notions of gender justice and how that might translate in the home, mm-hmm. in communities, including faith communities, you know, at the workplace, in public spaces, making these, you know, safe in the sense of inclusive for men, women, you know, whether it's trans people. And often the biases and the prejudices that you know come to be called sexism, often these intersect with other kinds of biases like racism, you know, homophobia, transphobia. So it's all somehow, you know, integrated in this way. Yeah.
And I think that's a huge problem in Malaysia, the cultural taboos surrounding it. Cause, and I think also, like, we don't want to interfere in things that are seen as family issues. And I don't know, I think that's one of the greatest challenges we're facing right now. Because I think there was a case recently about a woman who was constantly abused by her husband, and the neighbors saw, and she ended up being murdered by him, but nobody wanted to interfere, even though she asked for help. But,
yes.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Yes. Yeah. And especially in the context of domestic violence, which is, you know, an example that you cited. So understanding about marital rape and how many people cannot even fathom how that term would even exist, because, you know, upon marriage, a woman's, you know, body is no longer her own and you know, belongs to her husband, and, you know, mentality like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm speaking today to Dr. Sharon Bong, an associate professor of gender studies, and we'll continue our conversation on the basics of feminism after this break. You are listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We are kicking off a series called Feminist Fridays today, and on this first episode, I'm speaking to Dr. Sharon Bong, an associate professor of gender studies, and we are discussing the concept of feminism and why it has become an unpopular movement to some. So let's discuss some of the misconceptions that we were discussing about feminism. So I think one of the main ones is that it's a movement for women, by women, and made up of women in opposition of men. So I think you've already kind of answered that. Anything you'd like to add to that sort of to that argument?
Necessarily so. It was a movement that started by women for women, mm-hmm. you know. So we look to the suffragettes and even earlier. So the notion of equality as sameness was very important. So for instance, if, you know, men, half the populace, had the right to vote, then women should also have the right to vote. So this is the notion of equality as sameness.
Mm-hmm.
A home example would be, you know, if my brother has a curfew of 12 o'clock, why do I have a curfew, you know, of 10 o'clock or something like that?
Yeah.
So in the first instance, it is easier to appreciate how the understanding of equality is one of sameness. But with greater realization that, you know, women and men, boys and girls are differently impacted and disproportionately impacted by, you know, social phenomenon, whether it be, you know, conflict, or whether it be wars, or whether it be globalization,
mm-hmm.
or you know, technology, cyber dating and, you know, issues like this. There is the greater awareness that you know, that's inflected and a bit more nuanced, the understanding of equality
mm-hmm.
as equity, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, two common phrases that come up when we talk about men within the constructs of feminism is mm-hmm. male privilege and patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could just sort of explain those two to us?
Wow. Okay. Explain it. So
what does male privilege mean?
The reason why it ties in with the earlier question of why, you know, is feminism necessarily even today a movement by and for women, is because when there is gender injustice or discrimination of someone based on his or her, you know, gender identity, it is systemic.
Mm-hmm.
So which means that it is institutionalized to the point that people take it as a given. They take it for granted.
Yep.
And the images that we see around us, the, you know, personalities. So it's discrimination that is intentional, that is purposeful. And that's why, you know, to counter that, you need similarly concerted effort, not just by women, but also by women and men. Mm-hmm. So to a large extent, yes, boys and men are still very much privileged by these processes. Mm-hmm. And patriarchy is the shorthand that you know, many take to for these processes of very systemic, institutionalized, you know, marginalization or discrimination. But personally, I tend to be a bit more reserved with the use of patriarchy because it has, you know, many, many connotations and a lot of historical baggage as well. Mm-hmm. And I use it in a reserved way in appreciation of so much of effort that, you know, women and men are making in terms of advocating for, gender justice and gender rights, beginning with women's rights.
I think another common accusation thrown at feminists is that patriarchy is just some conspiracy theory that blames all men, even decent men, for women's woes. Do you agree with that?
I was just reading, you know, 2 days ago, I think it was carried by The Guardian, that when there were, you know, global polls conducted, more men than women felt that women's rights were already accomplished, that women were in a good place.
And you and I would disagree.
I'm restraining the urge to say, like, typical. Okay, I just said it.
Don't restrain yourself in this interview at all.
No, I think there's some truth to that. And it has to do with, not conspiracy as in conspiracy theories, but it has to do with my response to the previous question that, you know, it's something that is quite purposeful because it takes... Gender work is work. It takes a lot of work to socialize, you know, girls and boys, sort of conditioning, you know, boys do this, boys don't do that. And similarly, girls do this, girls don't do that. Mm-hmm. It really, really takes a lot of work. You know, gender work is work. But many people take that as part and parcel of life. And to such a large extent, they don't question it anymore because they take it for granted. Yeah. But still, you know, you get ideas circulating around, you know, boys don't cry, you know, the division of color, you know, blue for boys,
pink girls.
For girls. And yeah, these things are still, you know, perpetuated. Some of it we laugh at, but the long-term effect or the effect of some of these, you know, conditioning are quite insidious, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite harmful.
And I can see it. I have a little daughter who's only about 19 months old and, you know, so we let her do everything that she wants, but there'll be some, let's just say, older people who'll be like, why are you letting your daughter behave like, why is she behaving like a boy?
Yeah.
She's very boisterous.
Yeah.
She's very lively. And I'm like, she's just a boisterous child. It doesn't matter, you know. And similarly, somebody gave her a doll and my husband was, why are you giving her a doll? It's disgusting. And he threw it away. But I mean, you shouldn't have that, right? You should let them play with tools and dolls and whatever else that they want to say. We need to start at a very young age with these things.
Yes, but societal influences, as you have already experienced, are greater and sometimes a bit more impactful than, you know, the upbringing in the space of the home.
Yeah, and it's
the, like, values.
It's so insidious, as you said, because I also have a nephew who's just a few months older and he will get the boys' toys, like the Jedi Knight's lightsaber, and my daughter got the princess, you know, little CD song.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to change that. Another misconception surrounding feminism, or an accusation, shall we say, is that feminists look for stuff to get mad about. I think this goes back to what you were saying about men thinking we've achieved it all already. You know, we can vote, we're working, we have a right to say things. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I mean, I would claim anger as with the same ferocity as I, you know, identify with the label feminist. In fact, anger was what got me started in personally in feminism. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, way back in the 1990s. Yeah, and I mentioned to you, you know, anger at you know, gender injustice that I perceived was happening within my faith community. And so to me, as much as, you know, of course, I would say that as much as feminism is not a dirty word, I believe that anger is not a dirty emotion as well. Mm-hmm. It has fueled many social movements for social justice.
For sure.
So, you know, I think it's very easy by way of backlash to, you know, brand feminists as angry, you know, ugly, you know, single, you know,
non-shaving.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to be caricaturized like this, but I mean, so what? You know, if certain rights that no one thought were important are now on the table and it's starting to inform policy and change, you know, mindsets, then it's just part of the package, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were talking about why some women reject feminism, and that we discussed why, because it's very Western terminology and, you know, it's a bit hard. But another thing is that it's rooted in an us against the world identity politics that some, I don't know, if some younger feminists tend to reject. Have you found that happening in your work?
I mean, firstly, on the point that, you know, feminism is a Western import, I think there are many Asian-based feminists who would contest that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the first point. I remember a feminist activist, whom I'd once interviewed. She's passed on now. She said, you know, in relation to domestic violence, there is no Eastern-style beating. There's no Western-style beating.
All right,
which is true, right? A punch, a smack, a kick in the gut, you know, is what it is. So likewise, the antidote to that, you know, feminism, and whatever local labels or you know, derived from feminism or quite different, you know, localized labels that are used or even no labels at all, mm-hmm. It goes back to the first point I was making in terms of embracing particular kinds of values. Mm-hmm. I think if one does that, then, you know, the labels are surely unimportant. Yeah.
Yeah.
But having said that, there is a need to address the tensions, and you would find that there are different tensions, mm-hmm. Different, you know, conflicts, points of pressure with different social, political, cultural contexts. So that is something that you know, any activist would have to openly address.
Mm-hmm. And just going back to the younger feminists, mm-hmm. Are they identifying themselves as feminists? I mean, because you work obviously with very young students, right? So they're all fresh and, I mean, they've been brought up in a different generation, I mean, with different values, yes. I think, than you and I. But are they embracing this term of feminist? Are they proud to be called, to call themselves feminist? I mean, just based on your experience.
Okay. So in the classroom, where, you know, we have since last year already a gender studies major, and with very, you know, distinct units or subjects dedicated to feminism, mm-hmm. in Asia. There are, of course, men, I'm proud to say, and their faces are coming up now. So there are, you know, young men and young women who openly identify and claim the label, you know, feminist. Mm-hmm. And even for the ones who don't, because it's so well received, you know, the various units that make up the major, because it's so well received, I'm extrapolating that, and the other students are, you know, very critically engaged with the debates, with the discussions, mm-hmm. and we look to see how, you know, feminism has made inroads in so many different social cultural contexts, beginning with Asia, which is where we are.
Yep. Mm. And it has also arguably become more of an academic and philosophical tradition than a social justice tradition. I don't know. Do you agree with that statement?
No, I don't think so. You know why? Because I mentioned to you earlier that, you know, I've been working with feminist thought for so many years. That's how old I am, since the 1990s, I think. But and back then, academically, intellectually, you know, the theorists, the feminist theorists were already into post-feminism.
Okay.
We're already into post-feminism, yep. Right, in the past millennium. But, you know, so much of work still needs to be done. Mm-hmm. That's so evidently true, right? So evidently true. Although the gender development index of most countries, you know, are in a much better position now, but there's so much work that still needs to be done. So, you know, we can't retire in this lifetime yet. So, no, I wouldn't say that it's just, you know, something that is consigned to the intellectual realm. No, it's one of the fundamental, lasting, you know, values of feminism. It's why I'm still a feminist. in this lifetime. It's because it's not about the theories. It's not just about the ideas, but these are incredibly important. But it's how these ideas, you know, get translated into our everyday lives.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. You said we have so much more work to do, you know, like, if you had to list the top three in your list of things that we really need to get done, what would they be?
I think this very nicely loops back to your first question, who are feminists? What can we do? Depending on our, you know, circumstances and the different social roles that we play.
Yeah.
All of us are someone's sons or daughters. Not everybody is a parent, but, you know, and not everybody has the privilege to address impressionable minds without the, you know, temptation to, like, convert them. So some people are in very powerful positions, like you know, policymakers, for instance. So I think depending on our various circumstances, the first thing concretely would be to look to oneself. Mm-hmm. So in this, you know, Michael Jackson's Human in the Mirror, Man, Woman in the Mirror, comes to mind, because, you know, look to your own self to you know, sort of unpack the biases and the prejudices that you have. Mm-hmm. Because even feminists have prejudices.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, correct. Before looking, you know, to someone else. So that would be the first thing. And the second and the third, in terms of your, you know, top three concrete steps, that would be really dependent on, you know, one's social context and the social roles. So for me personally, it, of course, the second instance would have to do with my immediate family. Mm-hmm. And you know, sort of making visible some of these biases by way of the dinner conversations that I mentioned earlier in the interview, and just creating an open space where, you know, people can speak their minds and not feel like they have to say either the politically correct thing or, you know, have something thrown at them, you know, a chicken drumstick for saying the politically incorrect thing, you know, right? And thirdly, in my, you know, individual capacity, it has to be reaching out to my students. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sort of unpacking some of the, you know, prejudices there.
So just to kind of conclude, you're dealing with young people, and I'm sure we have a lot of young people listening now. What can they do for feminism? You know, how could they take it on and further its movement as such?
There are young people who are already doing that, because I see them getting involved in gender justice groups, whether it's Justice for Sisters or whether it's groups like Women's Aid or AWAM, you know, and so on and so forth, and other younger groups as well. Or, you know, speaking up among their friends when there are sexist remarks made, you know, or racist comments made or homophobic comments made, because it takes courage, you know, for young people or for indeed for anybody to speak up, you know, when we are with family, when we're with relatives, when we're with friends, because there's always the risk of being alienated, the risk of, you know, being ostracized, being branded, you know, weird, and or even more unkinder terms. Yeah.
Far more, yeah. Being the outlier, basically.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. And subsequently, you know, what can feminism do for them?
Well, the list is longer. It's basically, you know, breaking shackles of the mind, of the heart. Prejudices don't sleep alone. As I mentioned earlier in the interview, they often intersect. So if somebody is, you know, sexist, he or she is likely to be racist as well and likely to be homophobic. We see this very prominently in a very prominent statesman. So, you know, I think social movements, ideologies like feminism has done so much for so many in so many different social cultural contexts in terms of challenging us, you know, to break down these sort of biases and prejudices.
And, you know, you alluded to, obviously, Donald Trump and that lovely, lovely man who actually spurred me to do this. I don't know how you feel about this, but when he was elected president, after all those horrible things he said about, you know, his blatant misogyny, his blatant sexism, homophobia, racism. And he was still elected as president. And Hillary Clinton, who was in my opinion, the far more, and I think a lot of people's opinion, the far more qualified candidate, and she still lost. Do you think sexism is still well and alive in America or in the world?
Yes, without reservation, without hesitation. Yes, of course.
And I suppose what struck
me... The land of the free.
Yeah, you know, if it's happening there, you feel like, how do you go on with your fight when you just came from Barack Obama, who identified as a feminist himself, and yet their new president is this, who said these horrible things about women, you know, grab them by the pussy, things like that.
Yeah.
How would you, you know, advise women who, you know, might be giving up hope of fighting this fight?
I've mentioned this to some Facebook friends, you know, that, look, this guy is going to be in our living room for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
Frankly, you know, our energies could be better channeled elsewhere. And if we had to get angry and, you know, everything that comes out of his mouth just is so provocative,
mm-hmm.
I think one has to, for one's sanity, mm-hmm. sort of, you know, stagger one's righteous anger. Otherwise, you're going to be so totally burnt out.
Yeah.
This is not even his 100th day yet. You know, it's just the first week.
Second week.
Right? This is another episode.
Yeah, it is. I'll have a whole Donald Trump episode. So just to conclude, do you think feminism is relevant? And, you know, for anyone who wants to start, how do you get started? How do you get kick-started in being a feminist? And why is it relevant?
Actually, we could start with the last point that you made just before that.
Mm-hmm.
Because feminism, yes, it's about women's rights. It's about gender, you know, justice. Many people still think, yeah, it's a women's issue, it's a women's problem, you know, it's a women's thing, but it's not true. Because when there is gender injustice, it impacts so many different other fields,
mm-hmm.
whether it's policy in the case of international relations or it's business, you know, it's the economy, it's the market, it's the labor market, for instance,
yeah.
and so on and so forth. It's the way we communicate. And it even, you know, has to do with climate justice or climate change, for instance.
Yeah.
So there is a lot that that needs to be done. And in going back to an earlier point, it has to do with our individual capacities, because one person can't do everything. But certainly there is so much of initiatives around the world and locally as well, where we're synergizing our efforts, whether it's using, you know, social media as very valuable platforms or, you know, otherwise,
mm-hmm.
The many, many sort of social campaigns. And sometimes people just, you know, having the guts to work in very isolated pockets in very, very closed environments. Yeah, it's all of that.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
That was Dr. Sharon Bong, Associate Professor of Gender Studies at Monash University, Malaysia. You've been listening to Feminist Fridays. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.